we're back to the second hour of Radio Alchemy on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. This is still Evan Ray. I'm sorry, darlings. My voice is going out on me very quick. I have a little attack of the cold, taking the echinacea, taking the vitamin C, taking all the above, but dag nabbit, it still got a little piece of me, and that's my throat. But trust that this is still Evan, and in this second hour, we are talking to a man that you know very well. He has been on with Roy time and time again for his investigative journalism into AIDS, into SARS. But today we're going to be talking with him about his new book, which I absolutely love the title. It's called The Secrets of Secret Societies. And you know I'm completely into picking the brain of this gentleman. His name is John Rappaport. His website is nomorefakenews.com. I want you to go there. I want you to bookmark it. I want you to join his list and become a member of his site. This man does a lot of great work for all of us here. And it's an honor to finally have him on Radio Alchemy. Mr. Rappaport, thank you so much, sir, for joining us here this evening.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. So we are catching you down in lovely San Diego. That's where you are, correct?
That is right.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm telling you, I remember growing up as a child and looking at this Cold War situation and thinking, my God, if we were ever to have a nuclear war, it's going to be Southern California that's going to go first, because it has Camp Pendleton, it has the Trident submarines, it has the training base for the SEALs and the fighter squadrons out at Miramar. You seem to be in the belly of the beast of the military-industrial complex down there. Is that certainly a source for some of the work that you do, or how do you feel about being down right within the belly of this complex?
Well, so much of the economy appears to be running off of it, that's for sure. But, of course, before that, I was up in L.A. where the same holds true in a way. So many defense contractors and so on. I was up there for 35 years. My research as such doesn't really touch on these facilities here, although I've written a few stories that have come out of them. It's more involved with a global reach, you might say, of which the military-industrial complex is a major element, to be sure, and it is the touchstone for the present occupants of the White House, who are seeking to make an end run around various other elites and produce their own version of an American empire that they think is going to run the world. Sadly mistaken they are, as it's the cracks are deepening and widening in their plan as they go, and they're having so many problems and are having to lie so much to simply sustain themselves. But that is, in a sense, a secret society, because although they have a very public face and press officers and press releases and media contacts day after day after day, their agenda is not really visible. They want to conceal that agenda. They want not to have to tell people, what we're trying to do is dominate the world completely with military force and to control all the natural resources of any value on the planet. Instead, what we're really doing is fighting an endless war on terrorism, which, of course, is very reminiscent of Orwell's 1984, because you keep creating enemies as long as you have to in order to sustain your agenda.
Well, it's absolutely amazing that some of the projections, I mean, H.G. Wells, I understand, was a member of some of these very same secret societies, and it seems that they just hand you on a silver platter, for those that are willing to read between the lines, everything that they're doing. I mean, I use I say that they're addicts and they want to be stopped, and they keep telling us what they're doing, what they want to do. They do it arrogantly. They are coming out of their shadows. But for somehow, it seems that the schizophrenia of the American public does not allow themselves to see the facts as they are. But with your book, tell us, let's plunge into your book. Tell us about the origin of your title, The Secret of Secret Societies. What put you on this journey to writing this book?
Well, actually, the title is The Secret Behind Secret Societies.
Oh, very good. Yes.
The idea was simply the posing of a question. Is there a common denominator to all secret societies? And if so, what is it? And whatever that would be the secret behind secret societies. And so I began to kind of circle around that question and do a lot of research and thinking, and eventually came up with the idea, which I had been convinced of for probably the last 35 years or so, that the world as we know it and what goes on in the world is a created reality, a stage play, a piece of theater, an illusion, if you will. And that that illusion is being created for the masses of the world by the media, as far as the information is concerned, and behind the media, various elite groups who have this idea of controlling everybody and concealing their agenda. So I began to, you know, research some of these groups like the British Round Table, the Bilderbergers, Council on Foreign Relations, Skull and Bones, a number of other groups. And what I kept coming back to was this concept of creating a stage play called reality. If readers or listeners would like to find a great novel on this, they could read The Man Who Was Thursday by G.K. Chesterton, which is a sort of satire on this whole premise. The British, by the way, are very much up on the idea and understand illusion, creating illusions. They have done it for so long themselves that they instinctively connect with it when they find it happening around them. And so I came up with two phrases which represent two great traditions in history. And one I call the formula of the secret society, and the second is the tradition of imagination. And the premise is basically this. Knowingly or unknowingly, all secret societies from the beginning of time have attempted to suppress the power of imagination and creativity in people simply by creating reality for them and saying this is what reality is. That I call the formula of the secret society. The tradition of imagination, on the other hand, is scattered all throughout history. The dots have never been connected by historians. They are what you might call isolated events in different places and different times. We would be talking about great inventors, great artists, sometimes collections of great artists in one place, such as the Dunhuang Caves on the edge of the Gobi Desert in China, which for several thousand years have been the repository of fantastic Buddhist works of art, paintings on the walls, sculpture, and so on, which reached probably its height during the middle of the Tang Dynasty. No one has ever really bothered to investigate these phenomena where creativity and imagination themselves gave birth to developments that changed the face of the world and changed the face of human perception as to what is at the root of all this. How did this happen? Why did it happen? What is the creative facility within human beings, and why is it so important? And isn't it interesting that the real underlying function of secret societies is to overwhelm that creativity by substituting for it the illusion that most of us tend to call reality that we adhere to every day, political reality, economic reality, even physical reality, psychological reality, and so on. So that's where the book really begins and ends. And there are many examples and contemplations of how these two great traditions have operated, intertwined, come into conflict, and so on.
When you're looking at, gosh, maybe I'm jumping to the end with this question, but it seems that these societies that have been around, what would you say, how long have these societies been around? It certainly isn't with the foundation of the Illuminati. We're talking about going back centuries. Isn't that true when it comes to the trajectory of these societies?
Wherever you have an organized priesthood, which takes you back probably to the dawn of human society, you have secret societies, because they were, at the beginning, religious organizations. And basically, they would all follow the same pattern. We have come down from the mountain. We have received the word. We are the elite. You yourself cannot have access to the word as an individual. You have to receive it through us because we have a better phone line into the highest authority. And we're presenting it to you as a fait accompli. And it will now form the basis of your entire perception of reality and of your life. And you have to adhere to this theatrical production that we are mounting based on these principles. Well, that is the action of a secret society, because what is being concealed there? What is the secret? The secret is, guess what? We impose this on you. And we, the most cynical among us, understand that we invented it to begin with. We didn't really receive it. Or if we did, we have reinvented it for you and put our own spin on it and made an enforcement wing to make sure that you adhere to the picture of reality that we are painting for you. An illustration that I often give is, it's as if you walk into a museum and there's only one painting and there are lots of guards around, and you look at the one painting, which is called reality. And that's it. You have no other choice. So we assume that in democratic times there is so much diversity that no one could be sucked in or taken in by this. But in modern days, of course, there are so many media lies and distortions, which are themselves a portrait of reality, that people are being sucked in all the time. But that's where it starts. So you could go back into the most ancient of Sumerian civilization and Babylonian and anywhere you would care to look, and you would find Egypt, you would find the same basic pattern of the priesthood, and they're all doing the same thing, although you know, the scripts are a little bit different.
So when we look at the ability to manipulate, and media being the, you know, the substitution for having centuries like the Roman Empire, having the physical bodies there to keep people in line, this internalized slavery that is imposed through the media, what did you discover about the relationship between the imagination and the media that makes it possible for them to create this cognitive drama that we seemingly cannot separate truth from fiction?
Well, the best way to put that would be, it's as if the media holds up a picture, and then the receiver, which is, you know, the person who's watching television or reading the newspaper, then proceeds to imagine in his mind the same picture and to say, yes, this is reality. I mean, it's a very simple 1-2 punch. And those people who are smarter than that are still faced with a problem of various levels of deception. For example, I've been following presidential campaigns actively since 1960. The same pattern emerges every time. And the media are the main promoters of this. And the pattern is basically this. Every 4 years, there seems to be such a gigantic crisis. You know, the world is going to end. And the only way to stop that from happening is to kick the current occupant of the White House or the current party out and to install the other candidate. And I have seen time and time again very intelligent people absolutely shredded in this mechanism every 4 years. People who ordinarily would say or understand at some level that the Republicans and the Democrat parties are one party with two heads, a false creation of conflict, which at the most basic levels and issues is the same party. And yet these people become, you know, rats in a maze. They run around like crazy. Oh, if we don't elect this guy, then the world is over. And then, let's say they do elect this guy, and they go, oh, thank God. And then 4 years go by, and things get worse. Oh, we've got to throw this guy out. We've got to elect this guy. And on and on and on and on it goes. The two-party system as it currently exists in America is a kind of funnel in which human beings are fed like fodder, screaming that you have to support side A or side B, and, you know, that's the only way to solve the problem. And that's just what they want you to do. That's exactly what they have created, which is the appearance of a conflict. And, of course, there are real differences and so forth, because if there weren't, then it would be too stupid for anybody to believe in. But at the root, there is no conflict. On the very, very important issues, for example, like free trade, there's no president from the Republican or Democratic Party that's ever going to get elected unless he is thoroughly vetted on the issue of free trade and supports it completely. Free trade being code for, I'll shorthand it and just simply say, corporate ownership of the entire planet. Corporations that have no allegiance to any country. On that, the Republicans and the Democrats are one, as they are on all of the handful of really important issues. So what people do is their imaginations begin to paint these horrific portraits of how the real problem that we're facing stems from one political party or the other, or one occupant of the White House or the other, and the only way to solve the problem is to throw that person out. And what they fail to realize is it's their imagination that's creating this idea. I mean, yeah, the media pours it on, of course. But ultimately, it's people who are affirming this creation. It's like walking up to a giant mountain and saying, yep, that really is a giant mountain. Well, that same kind of polarized delusion that is created in the American mind by the media and all over the world, it's either this party or that party, is one of the primary theatrical creations of the global elite, which supports no party or all parties. That it doesn't matter.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County, and you are tuned to Radio Alchemy. I'm your host, Eben Ray, and it seems like me and John are both fighting off a little throat action here, so please forgive us. John Rappaport is with us. He is the information purveyor of NoMoreFakeNews.com. Please go to his website and check out his latest book, The Secret Behind Secret Societies. And isn't it fantastic? In the first hour, we had Bob Dobbs. And, of course, he really confuses you because he is talking about this media environment, the extensions of our first nature bodies into media that we do not recognize them, and the fallouts from them. And now we are getting to the point where John is talking about theater, high-level global theater. Theater of the mind, and how the media has the natural capabilities. It's so natural for us to take stimulus response, to act like Pavlovian dogs, and just be brought around by the nose because we have grown up in an environment that has a natural hierarchy and an authority that we listen to. And that's a double-edged sword there, John. Really amazing. And what's great about your book is that you hit head-on the idea of conspiracy, because the big lie has been in operation probably since the beginning of time with man, with woman, and the idea that you create something that is so big and so horrendous that if the truth ever were to come out, nobody would believe it. And that's what you're talking about right now, is that a collusion, a cabal, not just of the United States. And that's what I appreciate about what you're saying, because I know Bush, and I know that we are the leaders right now of this frontal attack on world civilization. But behind the scenes, every single government is with us. They might sit there out front and say something like, oh, well, you have no justification for going into Iraq. But if you looked at the paperwork behind it, there are corporations in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, even out of Africa and these other countries that are lined up to get those contracts for the privatization of Iraq. And so while on the front, they look like there is this big fight and this moral high ground that they are fighting for, behind the scenes, everybody is on the same page. And that's why Bush has the gall to go to them and say, give us money. Because behind the doors, they benefit from the blood and guts that are being spilt by these young Americans currently in Iraq. So my question is, what has been the reaction when you talk to individuals about you taking on the idea of conspiracy? Because this is what it is. It is a coordinated effort, a global coordinated effort to create this kind of reality. Your whole book is about that definition.
Yeah, it is. You know, I get various reactions from people. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time talking one-on-one with people about this. I do lectures. I write my website. I write books. I would say, in general, the reaction that I get is very positive to what I'm writing and talking about. I mean, positive in the sense that people say, you're right. There is something like this going on. But then, of course, you get a lot of other people who are in a fury about whatever they're in, a fury about, and they see answers on a different level or problems on a different level, and that's where they are. But again, I have to emphasize, they want you to be so mired in events of the moment and so distracted and so put into fear by what is going on all around you that you grasp at straws to find some dim hope out there that you think is going to deal with this. And as I said, every 4 years, like clockwork, a great deal of enthusiastic energy begins to boil up to the surface. Oh, we can solve all of this or change it if we just simply take the opponent of the current evil genius or idiot who is causing all of our problems. I mean, They want you to do that. I mean, that's the game that they're playing. That's the way they want to drive you, pillar to post, whipsaw effect, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And the more they do this, the less people will even have a clue that there is any real way out of the maze. And, you know, when I write about mind control, there are many people who read what I write and they say, yeah, well, I'm hip to that. And of course, I understand the MK Ultra program and I know about this. But I myself am certainly not under any serious level of mind control. You know, I mean, I've gotten out of the box and I know what's going on. And so, you know, whenever I encounter that, I say, okay, then I presume that you're free enough to offer a real solution to the problems that we're in. What's the solution? And furthermore, what are you going to do about it? And if they're honest, they usually have nothing to say at that point, because they've abandoned the idea that simply voting for the other guy is going to solve everything. They're smarter than that. But there's something missing. There's something that has been so deeply repressed in each one of us that we don't even think it is there. And, you know, if I could underline that sentence 500 times, I would. And that thing that we don't think is even there is our own individual imagination and creative power to invent novel solutions that really are solutions long-term to what we are mired in, and to begin to take action to actually decentralize power on every conceivable front on this planet and take it out of the hands of the elites and the corporations and the governments who are busily creating a more and more of a slave planet. Now, if you want to think on something, think on that. Think on what you can imagine that you can do. I can't tell you how many people read my website and they write into me and they say, gee, I'm depressed now, and what can I do? Well, first of all, I've written over 2,000 articles since I started this website, and in a number of them, there are sprinkled around various solutions at different levels, things that people can do, but somehow people conveniently tend to ignore all of that. That doesn't count. They want instant coffee. Just pour water over this powder and everything is going to be okay. And so, I mean, I've got a million solutions. But the point is, when people don't even any longer believe that the creative power that is within them that they can access, and I'm not talking about something terribly esoteric here, as long as they believe that that doesn't really exist, or if it does exist, it's not all that important, it's kind of trivial, and maybe, you know, at best they could write a poem or something, and that's about it. As long as people continue to believe that, the ball game is over. We're screwed. The war is over. We lost. That's the end. Forget about it. But as soon as enough people begin to wake up to the fact that they do have this power to invent and imagine and create novel, long-term, decentralizing solutions to the centralization of power on this planet, the game is on, very much so. And that is what I call the tradition of imagination, which has been written out of the textbooks. It's never really been in the textbooks. Nobody has ever paid it much attention. I have a whole chapter in the book on paranormal laboratory studies and very, very good evidence that the overwhelming amount of well-designed, controlled laboratory studies over a 50, 60, 70-year period completely confirmed the existence of all of these paranormal abilities. There is no more argument about it. And if people want to read a great book about that, get The Conscious Universe by Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N, who is a scientist who analyzes all the studies and shows you the truth. So this is where the rubber meets the road. You know, this is where people who are addicted political junkies, for example, just to pick one target, have no chance whatsoever. Nothing is going to happen. Absolutely nothing is going to happen. Does that mean that you just simply defect from the entire political process? Absolutely not. But what does that mean, political process? It means, for us, decentralization of power. In what areas, for example? Energy, media, medical, just to name three. There are probably, I'm going to guess, 200 private money systems in the United States right now. People printing their own money, decentralizing the Federal Reserve in a very real sense. Decentralization of power on every front, using imagination and creative ability to figure out how to do that and doing it.
I think one of the obstacles or things as we go towards decentralization is the idea of authority. There are natural hierarchies, and they have to do with age. The destruction of the family in the United States makes it such that it seems that the children generational repeat the same crimes of their parents because the establishment is able to play the same tools, put the same mind control on a generation that wants to, you know, grow up way too fast. And we see it really today with children. But one thing that I saw within some of the anarchist groups, they talk about decentralization. They talk about, you know, leveling and not having leaders. But yet, within the movement itself, there are leaders. There are people that take control. They're usually male, and there are women there with the same maybe amount of time and same amount of study, but they aren't necessarily given the opportunity to use their imagination or lead, because they say no leadership, but yet there are individuals that bust onto the leadership and try and rally the troops. And it seems that that there is kind of a chasm between theory and between actual action, because the download of this software that is the ways of control is so sophisticated that it sets up divisions between male and female, between male and male, between female and female, between generations, and there are so many things to bond. What is, how do we, in this decentralized area, it seems that there has to be a heck of a lot of work that individuals need to do for themselves to be able to not, in their own little microcosms, create another authoritarian regime. Do you find that to be true, or do you see that people have come up with ways that make it equal at that level?
Well, I find it to be true. But at the same time, I have seen other groups that have managed to avoid that. They tend to be smaller groups. But, you know, for example, I mean, it seems ridiculously simple to give this advice, but if you find yourself in a group where your talents, your creative ability, and so forth are, you know, not allowed to surface, get the hell out. That's step one. I mean, you're in the wrong place, obviously. Because what is going to happen to you is you are going to reinvent yourself as some kind of mindless robot who follows the champ. Now, as you point out, that ain't any solution to the problem. You know, that just makes it worse. Get out. Start something on your own. Find a few like-minded people and begin to talk and begin to plan and strategize. I'll give you one example from my website. A guy wrote me maybe a year ago and said, I love what you're writing about alternative energy as a way of making an end run around the oil companies. I would like to get into this, but I have no technical background and blah, blah, blah. What can I do? So My first reaction is, okay, this guy doesn't know he has an imagination. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's not that I'm impatient with people these days, but it's just that I'm seeing things a lot clearer than I used to. Because if this guy had an imagination, he'd have 50 ideas in an hour and a half on his own. Okay, that's the way it is. So I wrote back to him and I said, well, I have no idea what you do for a living, but you must be doing something. And I'm sure that if you took an inventory of your own abilities and training and skills and so forth, you would find maybe two or three things that you're very good at. Maybe it's accounting or PR or sales or whatever it is. I don't know. So what you do is you go on the internet and you research and you find some small company or outfit that is trying to put alternative energy into the marketplace. You check them out to within an inch of their life and confirm for yourself that they're not frauds and goofballs, but they really do have something. And now you go to those guys and you make a convincing case that you can help them because you have certain skills that they appear to need. About 3 months later, this guy writes me a letter. He's now working for one of these companies. And he's making a contribution. And he feels terrific. He's gotten out of his old boring life. He's trying like hell to make something good happen. And he's in the right place with the right people. Well, anybody can do that. Anybody can try that. I'm not saying quit your day job right away. But you can certainly research making a significant change. Why not? And if a lot of people started to do this, who knows what might happen? Because sure as we're talking, there are about 15 to maybe, 500, I don't know, really viable alternatives in the whole energy field out there that would make a tremendous difference for the world.
So in a sense, it's like don't fight the beast, ignore it, and create your own utopia, in a sense.
Yeah, but make sure that the utopia that you create is going to have, or you're going to make it have, a wider impact. Mm-hmm. And that is going to affect the world. I'm not opting, for example, for, let's have more gated communities. And I'll give you an example of this. A guy with an alternative energy company who's just getting off the ground wrote me and said, I'm optimistic about our chances. At the same time, I realized that this is only a drop in the bucket and what can I do, blah, 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 blah. And that arrived at about the same time that somebody wrote me who wanted to start their own school because they felt that the educational system in their area was so pathetic that it was having an extremely negative effect on his children. And so I wrote both of them and basically said, okay, one guy wants to start a school. This woman over here wants to expand her alternative energy company and make some impact in a wider way. Consider this. Create a model. In other words, your company or your school becomes a shining illustration of what can happen when a bright, creative, rational mind applies itself to the problem and comes up with an answer. So not only will you create a school and a company, but you will then write a book or you will put up a website or you will offer your services to consult so that other such companies and other such schools can get off the ground. That they can be created so that instead of one of these great, terrific schools that you want to create, there could be 500. Instead of this one energy company that finally understands how to do business in the marketplace, you might have 5,000 because you've made a model, you've made it work, and now you tell other people how you made it work. And they appear to be doing that as we speak. So, yeah. If you think that voting for Bush or whoever the Democratic candidate is going to be in 2004 is really going to make a difference, go ahead and do that. I mean, there's nothing I can do to stop you. If you think Nader is the right guy, vote for him. Fine, whatever. But I see, for example, in that area, that the trend really seems to be that less and less people vote. So what is the path of least resistance there? Try to get more people not to vote. Suppose we had an election where 300 people in the whole country voted and one guy won by 15 votes. Do you think finally people would begin to wake up to the fact that this bogus democracy is a sham and a delusion created largely by very ill-intentioned people? I'm not saying it would be an easy job to convince all these people not to vote, but nobody's even trying, and the figures keep going down anyway. So who knows what might happen if you put a little juice behind a don't vote campaign.
Well,
so what you're actually saying is they're all conniving, deceiving criminals. I don't want to choose either of them, and I think you shouldn't either. And if enough of us decide that, we could expose to the world something that no media could cover up, that the American people are not just saying that they're sick and tired of what's going on in Washington, but they're proving that they're sick and tired.
Yeah, I always thought that maybe they should have had one that said none of the above.
None of the above. That's, people have proposed that. Of course, that'll never happen because in a national election, because every legislator in Washington would be absolutely terrified.
But John, it seems that the reason why there's an electoral college, the reason why there is voter fraud, et cetera, is because of the power of the vote and the idea of not being run by the masses, the tyranny of the masses, so that there is something very important about the vote. And isn't it not that everybody should abandon the vote, but everybody should vote for the candidate that actually has a platform that cares, you know, even if it's, you know, Peter Camejo or whoever it is out there that
now we'd be talking about, say, independent candidates. You know,
right.
You've got a guy in your city who you really think understands what's going on, whatever it is.
Right.
Okay, fine. Terrific. But, I'm sorry, but I just don't find many of those people.
Oh, sure.
I don't think there's, if I could find 10 in the whole country on any level of government that I thought, A, really understood what's going on and had a platform to solve it, and B, was honest enough so that they couldn't be corrupted once elected, I would be very surprised if I found, 10 or 20 of those in the whole country.
Well, I think that we can name maybe 3 or 4 right now. And I think that leading by example would bring out, I think that this is all a part of what you're talking about, which is the theater that, and a gentleman that we've had on this program before talks about turning around and making greed a virtue and sex a vice, and how that has worked so much in turning over the values and turning and breaking, and it was Father Charles Moore who said that, and breaking that down, because if it is shown over and over again that you need the money, you need the connections, certain things get wiped off, certain things get accentuated, there are so many examples of fine lights that have been snuffed out in the history of the U.S., that, I think that those kind of examples kill the imagination or kill the spirit of what we think the vote is all about. But it seems that by going to the example of not voting, that leads us to the point of where they that they want us to. I think that is a ploy.
No, I don't think so at all. I disagree completely. They want to get us to the polls. They want there to be this polarization. You have to have the illusion of difference, conflict. One is better than the other. That's the game that everybody's really addicted to. And all you have to do is tune into election year coverage and watch the horse race on the media day in and day out.
I agree with that, but all I'm saying is that that means that you don't play into the two-headed, you know, two-headed monster.
Okay, but then you're going to have to be faced with the problem of finding an independent candidate that isn't just, oh, he's great because he's not a Democrat or a Republican.
No, there are people out there
because he's really great.
No, there are people out there, and that's where the hard work comes from. That's where the energy and everything in uniting people to do something about our leadership. That's the hard work that we are abandoning, is that unity. And I mean, when we're talking about decentralization and having the sphere of control within what we can see and control, that we are to the point of globalization, the internet, that's the true decentralization. How do we, in a sense, leverage that into a true and hopefully, I don't know about, you know, the idea of bringing it into a global environment then brings it into a world government, and we do not want that. We still want nation states. We still want representation that's close to home. But I would be afraid to take it back into, there has to be community, people, neighbors helping each other on a tactile basis. But
well, nothing that I'm saying is going against that. See, my perception is that most people vote either completely like automatons. You may as well send a machine to the booth to, you know, push the button on the machine in the booth, or they vote in a state of some kind of, you know, completely abominable hysteria every 4 years. That's what I see. That's what I see all around me. It's either you're so tradition-bound, oh, I'm always voting Republican, or yeah, my father was a socialist back in 1916, and I vote Democratic, or whatever it is.
Right.
Or you have people that are in a state of hysteria, absolutely convinced that the only way out of this is to take the guy out of office and put in the other guy. That's what I see all around. Now, you know, my answer to that, and what I write on my website, and what I stick to, and nobody's going to budge me off this, is don't vote, period. If enough people say this whole shooting match is totally corrupt within the Beltway, to be sure, and we're going to register our opinion on this, then, you know, I don't know. But who knows what might happen?
Well,
the last thing that the establishment wants is that the voter figures, the totals that go to the polls on big election days, is so small that it's a joke, a complete joke, that everybody can see. They want to maintain that illusion. And yes, as you say, if you can find somebody, or if you are that person, I mean, I ran for Congress in 1994, and a lot of what I'm telling you now is based on my experience then. If you can find somebody out there that you really, truly think has answers, and they're going to shove in all their chips on it, and, you know, fine, you want to vote for that person. I mean, you know, it's always your choice. But what I'm saying is, in these big elections, it's total mind control at work. And my first step in destroying that is get out. Get out of that head. It's completely bogus.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Gore had been in the White House, my contention is that it might not on the surface have appeared to be as bad as Bush, but it would have been real bad, just like it is now. Real bad, just like it was real bad when Clinton was in office. And there's still a bunch of idiot Democrats running around out there that actually think that the economy was in great shape during the Clinton years, that think that this stupid stock market bubble was really real, that didn't perceive that the country was going down the economic toilet. And yeah, okay, maybe the deficit wouldn't have been quite as bad under Gore, and there would have been a few salutary differences, but I just fail to see, because it's all part of the same illusion anyway. That's the problem. Oh, we got Gore in there. Oh, thank God. Oh, this. And then 4 years later, after a lot of scandals and stuff, and people are now saying, damn that Gore, he was just as bad as Clinton, and now we got to get one of our boys in there. I mean, it's sickening to me. After 40 years plus of watching these elections, it's totally sickening.
I understand. I do. And I understand about the idea of voting as an automaton. And, of course, the idea is to get to people and get educated. And that's the idea of what media is about. And you are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. This is Radio Alchemy. I'm your host, Eben Ray. On the line, John Rappaport. We are talking about his book, The Secret Behind Secret Societies. And, yeah, we can choose to differ on the methodologies of change, et cetera. It's a very complicated thing. But in these last few minutes, let's get into the number of secret societies. Do they fight amongst themselves? Do they all have particular industries that they harness so they have specializations and don't step on each other's foot? How many secret societies did you run across? I'm sure that there are some outside popular wisdom of the Freemasons, Bavarian Illuminists, Fabian Society, Collectivists. What other societies did you discover in your research?
Well, I would say that the most important secret society that I discovered, although I don't discuss it in the book because most of my research came after that, is the Jesuits.
Yes.
That is, you know, a super duper duper secret society.
Yes.
These guys are the master chess players on the planet. They are the master go players on the planet. They know the art of war by Sun Tzu like nobody has ever known it. And they know how to think 100, 200, 300 years into the future. They know how to appear to be completely defeated and weak and destroyed when they are actually at their most, at the brink of a most powerful victory. They know how to play it upside down and inside out and crossways. They know how to infiltrate other secret societies and control them, and governments and foreign services, and this and that, and intelligence agencies. They firmly believe that the world is destined to be a theocracy under the Pope. And although that may seem clownish and medieval and stupid and absurd in these modern times, that is precisely what they want you to think. And if I had to name, one group that is, the meta secret society, that would be it.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad. Adam Weishaupt, the creator of the Illuminati, he was a Jesuit.
Yeah, he was an educated Jesuit. And so are many other people that you don't know about. If people want to read a really chilling book, they could look for Rulers of Evil. The author's last name is Saucy, S-A-U-S-S-Y, published by HarperCollins.
And did you look at Eric Phelps' book, Vatican Assassins?
Vatican Assassins, yes, and the connections between the Jesuits and the Masons, the formation of the Masons out of the apparently destroyed Knights Templar, the beginning of the 1300s, and the various frip-frap that the Masons cover stories they have invented. I'm talking now about the highest level of the Masons. I'm not talking about three guys with cigars in a little motel room having a drink. The incredible cover stories that the Masons invented to explain their long and ancient history that went back to the Temple of Solomon, something that, I would believe about as soon as I believe that an ant is going to win the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, exactly.
these guys they appear to be, in many respects, in conflict, the Masons and the Jesuits. In fact, they're not. Other secret societies are definitely in conflict. I mean, this is not all peaches at the top of the power ladder. There are many conflicts and there is cooperation. It is an organically evolving situation where people learn. Sometimes they learn the easy way and sometimes they learn the hard way, these elite controllers. And they tend, in the long run, to decide decide that cooperation among one another is better for everybody than conflict, although there are many stops and starts. So it works both ways.
Yeah, it's absolutely tremendous. I'm so glad that you did bring up the Jesuits and the idea of the Black Pope.
The unknown superior, the Black Pope, who is the head of the Jesuit order.
Yes.
Talk about mind control. I mean, these guys impose a level of mind control on their elite members that is hard to rival anywhere. This is a political, military, intelligence organization. That is what they've always been all about. That's what they're all about now. They adapt beautifully to different periods of time and eras and countries and cultures. It matters not to them where they go. They are trained to find a way to be at home in any situation. These are not parochial priests I'm talking about. I'm not talking about people who give out food to the poor. I'm talking about very, very bright, dedicated, high-level operatives who are willing to literally do anything, underlined, to achieve their objectives. And one of their, let's call it medium-term objectives, is the creation of chaos, weakness, debilitation in every country that they can possibly go into. They would like to turn back the clock of technology because the Vatican operates best in an atmosphere of medieval desecration and corruption and primitive society.
Well, at the end of it all, there was the apparition of Fatima, or the Virgin Mary, in 1912, appeared to thousands of people. And the third secret of Fatima was never released, but there was an individual, Giorgio Bongiovanni, who was able to get it. And it said that Satan is in the Vatican. And maybe that's why the Jesuits and its extension is the seat and root of some of the overthrow and usurpation of the spirit and the souls of the planet.
They invented Satan.
Yes, absolutely. And they are acting out their own play on us, which is what you talk about in your book, The Secret Behind Secret Societies. We have spent the hour with John Rappaport, and it has blazed by. John, have to have you back on to continue this discussion. Amazing, timely book at this point in history when we're coming up on another one of those elections. And you're right. The fear has already been stalked with rumors of another terrorist attack for 2004. The voting scam, which is going to be perpetrated by this computerized voting system that Orish has been discovered to have back holes in it, back doors in it. And so always a pleasure, sir, to hear from you. Appreciate very much you joining us here tonight, Mr. Rappaport.
Thank you very much.
His website is nomorefakenews.com. Want you to go there, darlings. And we are out of here. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your late-night listening-ship. We'll see you next week.